The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We are back, and we're glad you have decided to come along with us. The AAC Commissioner, Mike Oresko, joining us in the first hour, talking about the CFP proposal. There'll be more on that this week in Chicago when the commissioners all meet. We'll have we'll have extensive coverage of that. We'll also have coverage before we go off the air tonight about the Notre Dame-Mississippi State game in Starkville. Do or die, winner goes to the College World Series. And more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Let's check out John, who is up next. Hey, John, thank you. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, I've missed you, bud, since I know it's been at least mid-90s to the early 90s. I mean, religiously.
Well, thank you.
And yeah, and I really enjoy it. It's something I look forward to every day. But my point is, the one thing I've never heard you speak about, because you don't talk about yourself much, but I'd really like to know this. What was it that possessed you when you went to Tennessee to go into sports journalism? Is that what you initially went there for, or was it something there? What was it?
John, you're going to make me relive my backwards education, and I don't mean that at Tennessee. I mean it the fact that I didn't know, truthfully, I didn't know what I wanted to do when I got there. And I, about halfway through my tenure there, I saw an ad in the school newspaper for a reporter's position, and I went down there, and I will just say this only to you, because I don't want to be I don't want this to get out. They asked me if I knew how to type, and I said, of course. Now, my experience typing had consisted of a typing class, I think, in the ninth grade. So they gave me, they gave me an assignment, and I mean, I just found all of a sudden I'm like, I'm discovering some nefarious scandal. And when I started to put the story together, I wrote it out, and they said, I thought you said you could type. I said, well, my hands hurt. I mean, I don't know. I just made something up. But anyway, the end of the story is I got a job as a reporter. I covered the student government for about 6 weeks and found out that was not particularly exciting. And I eventually moved over to sports and I loved it. I mean, I didn't want to leave school because covering sports at the school paper was the greatest job of my life. And that's how I got into it.
Well, that's interesting. That's fascinating because, and I won't keep you long, but I really enjoy picking the brain of everyone. I like to know where, you know, people, what got you into this? Especially successful people. You know, how did you get to this point? And so that's interesting, Paul.
Well, thank you, Ray. I mean, by the way, you have to me the key ingredient to be a good broadcaster or journalist, because you have to be curious, and that's what it's all about. And I owe the University of Tennessee a great deal, because without their low standards for accepting reporters on the school newspaper, I would probably not have a career right now.
Well, they're probably expecting a check from you.
I'm sure that what's the old line when somebody calls you for money? You always say, well, the check is in the mail.
That's right. That's right. Well, Paul, I appreciate the insight. I really do. I've been wanting to ask you that.
So. Well, John, it was my pleasure.
Have a nice day.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no,
thank you.
I wish I had a better story. It might help me in my next pursuit. But yeah, I mean, I everybody's story is different, and obviously that was a long time ago. And I appreciate you asking. Let's check out Tommy in New Orleans. Hello, Tommy. Go right ahead.
Hey, first-time caller, long-time listener. Quick question. I'm going to ask you this and hang up. Who do you think has the inside track for the LSU quarterback battle? Is it going to be Miles Sutton or Max Johnson? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I am going to give Miles Brennan a slight edge just to start, because I think I know they were comfortable with him before he got hurt. But I think it's going. I think that opening game is really going to help settle this, because it's a road game, it's a tough game, And I think if one of the two can get in there and win the game, I think it will lead them to the position. But I do think it's up for grabs. And you already knew that, though. That's why you asked. Hey, thank you for the call. Tommy is up next in Mississippi. Hello, Tommy.
Hey, Paul. I really enjoy your show that you put on. It's outstanding.
Thank you.
And your staff also. But I have one question about the game tonight, Mississippi State and Notre Dame. I'm a Mississippi State fan, and I coached high school baseball for about 25 years, and everybody knows a little bit about baseball, little league moms and everything. But I just wondered, what would your thoughts be, who you would start pitching is a big part of baseball. If you were Mississippi State, who would you start on the mound tonight? And Landon Sims is a closer mainly, but he is an outstanding closer and almost unhittable. Would you start your closer tonight, or would you go with your one of your rotation people?
Let me ask you this question, Tommy, because I've never coached baseball. I did play the sport rather poorly. I want you to give us the options here and what's going on there right now, because I don't know if you got a chance to see the game in Fayetteville last night, but because, I mean, and a lot of people are still buzzing about, you know, what was right or what was wrong. I mean, what was wrong was the fact that Arkansas couldn't hit. But give us the particulars as you see them as a coach.
All right. They have Jackson Frisco, who's been a starter most of the year, but he has not pitched well.
When was his last? Do you know his last outing?
He just pitched an inning or two in the regionals.
Okay.
And then they have Houston Hardy, who has mainly been a reliever, but he pitched pretty well. He came in relief and pitched pretty well. And then they have Landon Sims, who is there. He's kind of like Cobbs for Arkansas.
Right.
He's a real good pitcher, almost unhittable. He's up for the Golden Spikes
Award. How long could he go tonight is my question.
I think he could go at least 5 or 6.
Okay.
And
well, here's the issue, and I've watched this series from a distance. I mean, you're a little closer to it, but what's going on with Notre Dame's bats?
They're really hitting the ball. They're a good ball team. I mean, I have to hand it to them. They're a good baseball team. They made errors that they usually do not make in the first game in Mississippi State.
Yeah, I mean, this series should be over with already. I think you would agree with me on that. I mean, they probably should have won it on the game Saturday night. But this is where I always think it gets. I'm leaning heavily on you here because the strategy of baseball is so complicated, especially when you get to a third game of a series, because you're clearly you've already thrown your best, or at least in theory, haven't you?
Yes, you have.
I don't know what Notre Dame. I don't know enough about Notre Dame to know what they have on the mound tonight. We'll talk to KP later on, but I doubt seriously that they're in great shape on their third pitcher.
That's correct. That's correct. I just think that they ought to go with just my opinion, with Landon Sims, who is the closer, who has been kind of like Arkansas did yesterday with Cobbs. He has not been a starter, but he pitched nearly the whole game, and they just scored 3 runs off of him. And
By the way, it's a really good question, and the one thing I wouldn't want, and I want you to back me up on this, because I'm a talk show host, not a baseball coach, but you don't want this game to get away from you like it did yesterday.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Both games, Notre Dame has really had a lead, and in the Saturday game, Mississippi State came back and won, but yesterday Notre Dame got so far ahead, Mississippi State didn't catch up or anything.
Well, there was a lot of scoring. I noticed where Tennessee was high in the teens. Ole Miss, when it won, was in the teens, and then the two games it lost, it was the same thing. So, is that just weekend series when you get down to the final game?
Usually, when they get down to the third pitcher, is, you know, they have three-game series, and usually when they get down to the third pitcher, it's a high-scoring game. So, but the Landon Sims for Mississippi State can really throw the ball like he's 96, 97 miles an hour.
Tell the audience this, Coach. What's the pressure like? What's it going to be like tonight? You have 14,000 people, but the whole season is riding on the outcome.
I think it's going to be a lot of pressure because Mississippi State people expect Mississippi State to go to the College World Series. I mean, we have nearly 15,000 people show up for most games, the weekend games. And we just got a new, brand new stadium that's really the Carnegie Hall of
it's beautiful.
Of baseball, college baseball, about a $65 million stadium. And it's really nice. And I hope to go with Sims, but
Okay, well, listen, Tommy, I'm going to defer to you. I don't know. And, you know, there's some things I feel like I'm comfortable in giving a strong opinion on, but as we get down to the you know, the third end of the Mississippi State pitching staff, I'm gonna lean on you heavily there. We'll take a break. More to come. It's a big game. I cannot wait. 855-242-7285 is our number. John Wilner on the latest from out west about the CFP.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome you back here, and we are about to talk to one of our favorite guests, John Wilner, who covers all of college football, but the Pac-12 so expertly. From the Mercury News. John, thank you. Great to have you back. I guess I should be saying to the folks in the West Coast, welcome back to the college football world. Looks like we're finally going to hear from you guys.
It seems that way, doesn't it? I mean, this was certainly a huge, if the current proposal becomes official, it was certainly a huge win for the Pac-12, the group of five. I mean, gosh, Craig Thompson certainly had made his voice known on that subcommittee, Mountain West Commissioner. It worked out almost as well as the Pac-12 could have hoped. I think that maybe they would have wanted their winner to get a guaranteed berth, but the path is going to be pretty wide for them.
You have done some reporting since this all came out that is pretty eye-opening in terms of the money. We still, we're still in the early stages of trying to sort all this out because we don't even know when it begins. But share with us what you are learning about the residual, especially to the Pac-12.
Well, it looks like it could be, and this is kind of based on some analytics modeling from Navigate, which is a real well-respected operation that consults in the college sports space. But, you know, they think that given the way sports rights are headed, using the NFL's recent deal and NHL's recent deal, SEC, you know, they kind of try to model out what a four-round 12-team playoff would do in terms of the TV dollars and determine that it would probably basically triple the Pac-12's current intake, revenue intake from the CFP. So basically from $9 million per school per year up to about $27 million per school per year, and they could certainly use it. There's no doubt about that.
That's a staggering number, and if you move that up, I don't mean to turn you into a Nobel laureate in mathematics, but if you move that over around the country, is there any guess on what it means to other leagues who have a little more of a profit and loss window than the Pac-12?
Well, they did the modeling based on, everything being equal. In other words, whatever pool of money let's just assume they sign with that all 11 games, for simplicity's sake, assume that all 11 games are with ESPN, that pool of money from ESPN, a big chunk of it will go to the Power Five, right? But the Group of Five is also going to get guaranteed some portion of it. So they assumed that the Group of Five money would then basically get distributed evenly among the conferences, but the conferences that have more teams, obviously the money, there's more slices of the pie. So, it's possible the Big 12 would actually come out looking best because they only have to cut their revenue pie 10 ways.
So interesting. And John, considering the often discussed ills of the conference network out there, I'm guessing this is going to make up for that deficit pretty well.
It will. It will certainly help. I mean, there's some athletic departments out here that, had tens of millions of dollars in shortfall before the COVID season hit. So it's certainly going to help a ton. But it's not going to necessarily help on a relative basis, right? Because everybody else is also getting more. So the Pac-12 will have more to pay defensive coordinators, for instance. The SEC is also going to have more to pay defensive coordinators. What it will really do is just help the Pac-12 departments, kind of bring their debts in line and pay, pay some debt service on stadium renovations and that kind of thing. But it won't help the Pac-12 on a relative basis because everybody else is getting a bump too.
John, let me ask you about the length of this the terms. But maybe we'll hear some more this weekend. But I'm hearing everything. Bill Hancock was here on Friday. He told us what we already knew, that he can't see this happening until the 23 season. That's 2 years from now. But others are saying they're not sure they can unwind the whole deal until the end of this contract. And then Mike Oresko was with us a few minutes ago, and he said, I'd like to start it next year. It's complex for myriad reasons, bowl contracts across the board, television contracts across the board. But is it as complex as some people in the industry are making it sound like?
Yeah, well, I'm sure, Oresko and Craig Thompson, those guys would they want to start tomorrow, right? There's no doubt about that. And the Pac-12 may want to start tomorrow, too. But I think it's going to be pretty complicated. And, the piece that some people, I think, don't necessarily give enough credence to is just the relationship that college football has with its bowls. What the new format would do to the bowls. Maybe, they want to kind of let some of these games down, let them off easy in some ways, right? I mean, that more than the contracts, I just wonder if there's, a commitment, for instance, to the in 2 years, it'll be the Peach and the Fiesta will have the semifinals. So maybe they just want to honor those commitments, to be honest with you. I don't think they'll wait till the 2026 season, which would be the end of this full contract cycle. I don't know. They wouldn't have done what they did last week if they thought everybody was going to have to wait 5 years. So my best guess is that, it will start with the 2023 season.
Because it seems, John, that this, the bubble would get burst. I mean, that is just way, way too long for this momentum to continue right now. And, we all may quibble about what we like and don't like, but I haven't heard anyone who doesn't like the idea of this. Have you?
You know, there's some skepticism because people think, well, that the game, you know, it's still going to be the same three or four teams in the semifinals, and the games won't be close and all that. But generally speaking, you know, this is better for the sport, right? And I think that is a big reason the commissioners want to do this, is because they recognize, you know, in order to grow college football and have it thrive over the course of decades, you've got to have it be relevant across the country. And it's becoming much more of a southeastern quadrant sport. And they want to try to do something to stop that, basically the contraction of interest that's going on, and get making sure that, you know, the Group of Five is represented and the Pac-12 is represented. That's going to help, you know, the sport thrive from coast to coast. I think that's a real driving force behind this, because let's face it, it's a complete change from what we've seen from college football over the decades, right? I mean, this has been a sport that has changed its postseason on an incremental basis, right? Nothing to the Bowl Coalition, to the Bowl Alliance, to the BCS, and now all of a sudden they're taking this great leap forward from four teams to 12, and I think it's because they recognize the sport really needs an injection of passion from coast to coast.
I heard what you said a minute ago about the bowls, and I've talked to other people on the air and off that have said similar things, you know, whether it's the Pac-12, Big Ten relationship in Pasadena, or the SEC, Big 12 with the Sugar Bowl. And I mean, everybody's got their drafting partner, but it seems like to the rest of the country, the Rose Bowl has always screwed it up for everyone else. Can you give us the behind the scenes on how that is going to be unwound? Because the Rose Bowl really had, perceptively, I don't know if it's reality, have stopped the progress of college football.
Yeah, it has. I mean, and there's no other relationship, you know, in college football like the Big Ten, Pac-12, and the Rose Bowl. And it is important to the conferences. It's important to the presidents and chancellors. I can't imagine that they would have gone ahead with this, Paul, what they did last week. First of all, I was surprised that it all came out last week. I didn't think that we would really get a whole lot of detail until the meeting on the 17th with the commissioners. But I can't imagine they would have done what they did unless there had been some kind of wink and a nod from Pasadena that they would be willing to play ball. And, you know, Jim Delaney is advising the Rose Bowl, and obviously he's got relationships and contacts deep with other commissioners and with ESPN, and it just seems to me like they would not have done that if the Rose Bowl is going to grind the process to a halt once they get into the nitty-gritty of the negotiations.
Finally, John Wilner with us. Oresco, who's a former ESPN and CBS executive, said, yeah, you know, once we get to this point and then that point, we'll call ESPN. Now, I don't want to be naive about all this, and I hope you'll help me and the rest of the audience, but it's hard to imagine that ESPN, who writes the biggest checks and has the greatest stake in all of this, is just sitting there without any back-channel conversations. Can you educate us on what you think has been going on and what will ultimately go on?
Well, you know, I'm totally with you. There's no way ESPN hasn't signed off on this in a general form. I'm sure that there are a lot of details to be worked out. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm skeptical about, you know, using the bowls as sites for the quarterfinals. That doesn't seem to me like it's something that's going to last very many years. But there's details they got to work out, but there's no way ESPN hasn't said we're all in on this, right? We don't know for sure that ESPN will, in fact, bid on all 11 games. I would imagine that they will, but, you know, we don't know for sure. And I think that big part of the issue is going to be for the playoff is going to be, you know, what kind of exposure are they going to get for these games on ESPN? Like, wouldn't you think that, you know, there's going to be that TriCast thing where, you know, ESPN Plus will have a part of this deal in addition to ABC and ESPN, right? Kind of following the NFL model with its three-tier distribution plan. So, I mean, ESPN is certainly given a wink and a nod. I can't imagine they haven't.
Yeah, I mean, John, just to fill in your point, I mean, there are relationships that can be contentious, but We both know the relationship between ESPN and the CFP is not contentious at all.
No, not at all. And they need each other. They're going to need each other going forward. I mean, it's critical, especially for the CFP, but also for ESPN. They don't want to lose that property. They want to grow the sport. I mean, it helps them with all of their agreements up and down the line for college football. If the playoff is thriving, that is going to increase the value and interest in the regular season. And that in turn just helps ESPN with all of its broadcasts during the season.
Yeah, incredible stuff. And again, we don't know everything. We seem like we do know a great deal. And this week, maybe we'll learn a little bit more. John, thank you for making time. It's always great to have you here.
Thanks a ton, Paul. Appreciate it.
You got it. John Wilner. Nobody knows more about this stuff than he does, and he has been joining us. We'll continue this conversation. We'll talk a little baseball later in the program. We've already had the commissioner of the AAC on, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're back, and Augie is up next in New Orleans. Hello, Augie.
Hey, Paul, how's it going on a Monday?
Pretty well, thank you.
Hey, I guess we don't have any Arkansas fans calling in today. That was a big bummer for the SEC, wasn't it?
Shocking.
Anyway, but I got to compliment you, Paul. When Tommy from Mississippi called, and he was asking about Mississippi State pitching,
right?
You were very artful in turning that question around, because I'm thinking, Paul doesn't have any idea about Mississippi State pitching, but you were expert in turning that question around. And
well, even if I did, I certainly would not have tried to match wits with a coach.
Well, you know what? You've done it before, and you've done it on your show, and you've come out on top. So I don't think that's any big problem for you, the master.
But I will tell you, though, the bullpen of the Mississippi State Bulldogs is probably not my specialty.
I didn't think so, and I was like, okay, how is Paul going to come out of this one? And boom, you pulled a knuckleball right out of your bag, and it was a right down the middle strike. So congratulations on that. And it was very interesting to hear LSU fans complaining about Tennessee
right,
players.
Right, yeah, that came out earlier.
I mean, you know us, Paul. You know we're pretty obnoxious. So when we start complaining about things, we need to, like, put a zipper on it. But Mike Oresko, does it seem to you that he's still politicking for an expanded playoff and
yeah.
It looks like it's already in the bag? I mean, is the American Conference automatically going to get their champ in?
No. To me, the headline of last week, there are no automatic qualifiers. And I think that was very clever by one or two commissioners and I think they were the ones with the most to gain by not having automatic qualifiers in. Hard to figure out who they are.
Well, does this expansion basically seem like the Alabama rule to you?
Well, I will tell you,
the anti-Alabama rule.
Well, I don't think. Yeah, I mean, certainly Alabama does not gain by all this because Alabama had already mastered the system with two or four, and you start adding, more schools at the bar, and something could always go wrong, like we saw yesterday in baseball. But I think overall, it may not be helping Alabama, but it is helping the SEC.
You think it's helping the SEC or hurting the SEC?
I think it's helping the SEC for this reason. The SEC would have had four in last year and the year before, and not maybe the year before, but that would have had four in a couple of different times. No league other than the SEC is situated for that. So the amount of money that will be funneling in, and one other thing, their new TV contract's about to go into effect, and games will start mattering more. And I mean, we saw this happen a couple of years ago, Augie. Do you remember? I think it was 2 years ago. Remember that big game? You may not remember it, but there was a big game. It was the same day as the Alabama LSU game. There was a Georgia Kentucky game in Lexington for the division, and Georgia won the game. It was over for Kentucky. The next week, they blew a game. I think it was against Tennessee, and their season was over. Had we had the playoff today, Kentucky probably wouldn't have lost the next week to Tennessee, which was a vastly inferior team. They would have finished the season and gone to the playoff. So November has really been helped, I think, by in many respects by SEC schools. Think about LSU, for example. How many times has LSU season been over with a late season loss to Alabama? It won't be anymore. They'll still have A&M to gain some credibility for, and if that's the only loss or the second loss, they will still be alive.
Well, I always perceive this expansion, especially to 12, anything more than 6 or 8, as the anti-SEC policy. But maybe you're right.
Let me say this. I don't think there's a specific. I mean, I think it's the kind of you understand this from your profession. You can shape the argument any way you want. And you know, if you're an Alabama fan or an SEC fan, you can shape the argument that we've done quite well under the current format. We've been in the championship game, SEC, every single year but one. Alabama's been in the playoff every year but one. The SEC continues to win it almost with great regularity. And now you're opening the door, but you're also getting more seats in there. It's like bingo on Thursday night. I mean, you're buying more shots on the bubble. So I don't think anyone knows the answer. All I'm saying is, if you're a league like the SEC and you have the biggest of everything, the argument would have to be made that it helps you.
Well, congratulations to Mike Oresko. Hopefully, he'll get a team in. He'll have a stake in the outcome of what's going on. So I hope he stays bubbly throughout the rest of the season.
And if he doesn't, he'll be right back here screaming and hollering like he was throughout last season. Yeah.
Complaining. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, Mike Oresko should have been a senator back in the day before the filibuster cloture was put into effect. I mean, he and Daniel Webster could stand up there for 9 hours or 29 hours and argue. Let's continue. Ed is in Mississippi. Hello, Ed.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing, buddy?
We are doing great.
For all the marbles.
You got it.
For all the marbles. Right. There is no tomorrow.
No, it's...
But,
it's,
Paul,
it's...
this is a interesting scenario here tonight. I've been waiting for 4 years. Like, let's us not forget Mississippi State fans 4 years ago when the girls from Notre Dame hit a corner and they robbed us of a championship. Well, tonight, the luck of the Irish, not even a leprechaun is going to help them. Hail State.
Now, you're right.
Thank you.
Irish going down hard tonight. We will talk more about that game later on. I mean, the idea that Notre Dame and Mississippi State playing tonight for everything, well, not everything, just a ticket for everything, but it's pretty much everything if you're in Starkville tonight. We will take a break. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
And we continue. Let's grab some more calls here. How about Danny up in North Alabama? Hello, Danny.
Hey
there.
Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Mr. Feinbaum? Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you.
I'd like to know what you think about Alabama. I mean, with their new quarterback and stuff like that, and the offensive line, they've lost a lot of people. I mean, defense, I don't know how their defense is going to be, but and also, I'm throwing all this out there to you real quick. because I don't want to take up too much of your time. I love the fact that they want to do a 12. I love that. I think they should. I think it should be done. But a lot of people don't realize, I guess, that these are kids. These are 18 to 21-year-old kids. And I know that they want to go to the pros, and most of all of them. And some make it, some don't. That's a very low percentage. But I just want to ask you what you think about Alabama's how their season's going to go, and what you think about the 12-game playoff. I love the fact that they want to do that. There's some teams I watch all the playoff games. I don't care if it's Alabama, SEC, whatever. I love SEC, love Alabama, but there are some teams that go undefeated that I think deserve to be in a playoff. They may not win, but they may. Any team as good as they may not be good that day. I mean, that's just how it is. So I just want to get your opinion on the things that I've just said.
Yeah, Danny, thank you for the call, and it's good to have you on. I'm really excited by the prospects of this. I hope it happens soon. I think it would be terrible if we had to wait to the end of the contract. The enthusiasm would go out of this quickly. The market is ready for it. They're tired of what we've been seeing. As far as Alabama, I think you almost have to put them in the Final Four. Still haven't made up a final decision about whether I think they'll do it. They'll win it again. I probably will. I haven't gone wrong picking Alabama for the last 10 years or so, and I will likely do it again for the obvious reasons. I'm still thinking about Georgia. I think this could be their year, but that's a big leap. I don't like Clemson to win at all. I think Ohio State and Oklahoma are major contenders. So fortunately, we're a month. Let's see. We're still 5 weeks away from Media Days. Media Days is a week later this year because of the way the calendar falls. Hey, thank you for the call. Let's talk to Pat up next in Chattanooga. Hey, Pat.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I've been thinking through this 12-team playoff, and my one thought that I have on it, I'd be interested in getting your thoughts, is one of my frustrations has been the quality and brutality that the SEC teams many times go through in their season. I don't take anything away from what Mike Clemson has done, the quality of program Dabo Sweeney's built, but it's not uncommon when by the time they get to the end of the season, they might not have one of their opponents left that's even ranked in the top 25. My thought on it is, by adding other layers of quality opponents, will that help to show the depth that it takes to come through the SEC, and could it actually benefit them when teams have to hit back-to-back strong programs that take a toll on their players?
That is fair. And ultimately, Pat, this is a concern that we've heard from many, many people before. But we're already hearing the pushback. Well, only one school could possibly play 17 games, and the odds of that are not that great. I mean, I don't know where to land on that. I'm not a medical professional. I think you do.
Well, and my point is not on it being too many teams. Mine is not all 8-0 records are created equally. An 8-0 team that has played a weaker schedule versus an 8-0 team that's coming through the SEC West, I don't think those two 8-0 records are equivalent. For example, several years back, probably been 20 years ago, West Virginia was 8-0. They were ranked real high. They're talking about the quality of their program. But after eight games, they listed their injury report, and it said no injuries to report. Basically, they had played through their first eight games with oftentimes their starters not even playing the fourth quarter. So sometimes it's frustrating to me the strength of schedule that you have to come through in the SEC, and many times other teams that make it and can end up ranked higher really haven't been tested.
Pat, I hear you. We have to leave it there. We're up against a break. We are coming back with two more hours. We hope you'll stick around.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.